This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Do you think that I might forget all my love is radiating further away?
You're with the Priest, the Pom, and the Poof on the Spirit Lounge, the show that explores sexuality and spirituality for our community.
And good evening and welcome to the Spirit Lounge on this lovely Monday evening. We are here every week, come rain or shine, between 9 and 10. Good evening, Priestie.
Good evening, Pommy.
Good evening, Mr. Poof.
Good evening.
Are you feeling better, darling?
I am feeling quite a bit better. I was feeling very flu-y last week, so I skipped a week.
Yes, well, we didn't want your bugs.
But Bertie was quite rude. She said you had the man flu.
I thought you might have said something like that, because I wasn't actually listening to the show.
Oh, shock horror.
I was definitely man flu then.
Look, I was curled up in bed, and I was really struggling to sleep, and my phone rang, and it was my ex-boyfriend going, "Do you have the man flu?"
You see, everyone was listening except you. Anyway, it's lovely to have you back.
It's good to
be. And we have a fun-packed program as usual. And my goodness me, we're talking about refugees.
And we're also going to talk about the Church of England's decision to allow gay bishops.
Yeah, a bit controversial, yes, though, isn't it?
Yes, that is. We're talking about in the UK, though.
Yes. And yes. My little spire tonight is talking about the good or the not-so-good news about sugar.
So it's full of sugar.
Full of sweetness.
Oh, that's not us, is it, really?
What do you mean? We're plenty sweet.
Oh, speak for yourself.
Anyway, our first track tonight, because we pick our own tracks, and I would just like to admit that I was hugely influential on this woman winning the X Factor all those years ago. And
is this in the UK?
This is in the UK. And I burst into tears when she won, because I am a bit of an X Factor. I do love it. I do love it.
So how often did you vote?
Just incessantly. Just send on my mobile.
But
it's a lot cheaper than it is here.
But you've had therapy since?
Yeah. No, I'm still, I've now got to popping the plastic bubbles, you know. I've got to that stage.
Far cheaper.
Yeah, I'm getting better. But anyway, this is the delightful, and I was so pleased she won because she deserved it, Leona Lewis, from her album Spirit and I Will Be.
There's nothing I could say to you, nothing I could ever do to make you see what you mean to me. All the pain, the tears I cried, still you never said.
And you were just listening to the delightful Leona Lewis. And while Leona was singing away to Melbourne and beyond, I said to my co-presenters, she is a born star. And Andrew, who clearly still has a cold in his ears, said, "What do you mean she's a porn star?"
I thought, what does that have to do with anything? Where did that come from?
You know, listen, guys, we've got a deaf DJ here.
So we never know what's going to happen tonight.
Anyway, Priestie, we've got a prize to give away, haven't
Isn't
we?
Isn't this exciting?
Yeah, go for it.
We've got a double pass to Manacle. Uh-huh. Now, last week, we interviewed the writer and producer.
We did. Brett
Cardy Ingram.
Yep, and John.
And, yeah, the
leading man.
Actor, John. My partner and I actually went to see this play on Thursday, and it's in the gorgeous La Mama Theatre, which has about 30 people, and you feel like you're almost in the play at times. The play is confronting. Mm-hmm. but fabulous.
Thought-provoking?
Very thought-provoking.
Controversial?
No, I wouldn't say controversial.
No?
But it's really, yes, it gives you a lot to talk about.
Mm.
Yes, one of those ones you want to go to and then go out for, you know, a hot chocolate and
go and debate it.
Have a discussion.
So did you walk away from the play with, like, lots of questions, or did it kind of all wrap up in a nice...
No, didn't wrap up. And I would hate it to have wrapped up in a nice little package because... I'd rather go away not knowing and be able to discuss what I think that happened, and my other half would have a different idea about what happened. I love that.
Make your own decision about the ending. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want a double pass to Manacle at La Mama Theatre, and you can go any time this week between Wednesday and Saturday, and this is valued at quite a bit. You have to be an existing member and not have won a prize in the last 2 weeks. But if you're not a member and want to join up, you can ring up, join up,
yep,
and win the prize. And it is the first person to ring, the gorgeous Robert who's out there.
Yep. And the number is 1-300-JOY-949. Or if, like me, you've got a BlackBerry where the joy bit doesn't work, it's 1-300. I haven't got my glasses
569.
On. 569-949. We've got one deaf DJ and we've got one blind DJ.
And if you want to also SMS us with comments on the show, nice comments, of course, 0427-JOY-949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. And our first guest tonight has a history of working with a refugee and asylum seekers. She has quite a long bio here, but what we'll tell you is that she was previously the national chair of the Right to Work campaign, seeking work rights for community-based asylum seekers, and also the director of the Hotham Mission Asylum Seeker Project. And currently, she is a member of the Council for Immigration Services and Status Resolution, CISSR, I like that one, advising the current Immigration Minister, the Honourable Chris Bowen, on refugee and asylum issues relevant to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Joy 94.9 and Spirit Lounge, Kaz Coleman.
Thanks very much, and thanks for having me on the program.
Now, I better say right off that I know Kaz. She was doing a Bachelor of Theology when I was doing mine, and we used to nick off to the local for a hot chocolate or coffee before, after, or during class.
That's right, we were one of the rejects, I think, or a small group of the rejects in theology class.
Yeah, I think so. So, Kaz, how did you go from doing a Bachelor of Theology to getting involved in working with refugees and asylum seekers?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I actually went and did some volunteer work after finishing theology, and I spent a few months in Indonesia and then headed off to India, where I spent some time with a community organisation. It was actually an organisation run by refugees for refugees. So it was Sri Lankans who were fleeing Sri Lanka across that small body of water over to India and Tamil Nadu, and did some volunteer work with them. And sort of my eyes were opened, I guess, to the struggles and experiences of asylum seekers as they have to flee their country, mostly unwillingly. I think it'd be fair to say that many of those who I met then and certainly since then have not necessarily wanted to leave their country, but for various reasons have had to.
So, and Kaz, hi, it's Bertie here, the POM.
Hi, Bertie.
It's lovely to have you on the show. You know, asylum seekers, refugees, it's a huge hot topic. It doesn't matter whether you're in Australia or the UK or, I mean, any first world country, I think, obviously trying to absorb and help and support as many of these people as possible.
Mm.
What are they currently, what are they escaping? What are they running away from? What's driving them away from their homeland?
Well, it varies depending on which country people are coming from. And it's interesting because it's the 60th anniversary of the UN Refugee Convention this year. And when the convention was set up, it was, of course, in very different circumstances around, you know, world war issues and, uh-huh, and people needing to find security in other countries. Of course, today there's a whole range of reasons why people flee, and that's different in Sri Lanka to Afghanistan to African countries. But predominantly people, as I mentioned earlier, often don't want to leave their homeland. So it's often about fearing for their safety, for their own safety, for their family's safety. And really, the refugee test, if you like, which is applied through the Refugee Convention for those countries that have signed it, and of course Australia has, is quite a hard test. It's not easy to pass. So even if you fear for your safety, it doesn't mean you'll end up being a refugee. So there's lots of people on the move in the world, many of whom will end up being designated as refugees, but others who won't. And eventually they'll have to return to their homeland.
And do you find there's... I appreciate it must be determined by where the unrest is in the world, but is there a trend or is there a flow of people with running away from the same sort of thing, or does it vary from country to country, or is it more men than women? Is it more individuals? Is it more families? Is it professional people? Is it unskilled people? I mean, that's a big question. The demographics, what are the demographics of the refugees these days?
You know, it's a good question, actually. And really, I guess the simple answer is it's a real mix. I mean, people leave for different reasons. And interestingly, actually, when I was the chair of the Work Rights Campaign, and for a long time, asylum seekers in certain circumstances in Australia were barred from working. And, of course, were ineligible for Centrelink. So we're essentially left destitute in the community, a certain group of people. They were the ones we were working with. But we actually commissioned a report looking at the skills of asylum seekers and in that situation, and it was surprising the amount of professionals that that had fled and had significant skills. Now, that's not everybody. There are others who are unskilled, but it really is a mix. Often males, not all the time, obviously. You know, we've got quite a few unaccompanied minors and families in Australia, but we have a significant number of adult males. Many of whom have families back in their home country, but they've had to flee. For instance, you know, Sorthy, who, and I've changed a few names and countries here, but who was a photographer and in his home country and found himself accidentally, unbeknownst to him, photographing around a military site, and that triggered for him a period of detention. And incidents of torture and then harassment once he was finally released. For him and his family, that meant he felt very insecure, not only for himself, but when he was with his family, he feared for their safety, so he fled to Australia. And that's one of his circumstances. Now, interestingly, Sorthy actually didn't pass the refugee test. He despite his detention and torture, he was able to return safely to his home country. That's not always the case. In fact, in Australia at the moment, those coming by boat have a very high success rate for protection. So most of them are refugees.
Was he, this chap in question, was he able to get into Australia as an immigrant then rather than a refugee?
Well, what's really interesting actually about the current debate at the moment is that most of the time, asylum seekers actually come by plane, generally with a visa. It's generally with a student visa or a tourist visa. But every now and then we have increases of people coming by boat. And, of course, we're seeing that right now. And we saw that a decade ago. And there's various reasons for that. It's generally about countries in our region and what's happening. But most of the time, and this is what's really interesting, the spotlight's on the people who are arriving by boat, and there's about just under 6,000 in detention at the moment. But in actual fact, there's about 8,000 to 10,000 living in the community who've arrived by plane. And we don't tend to worry too much about them. But, of course, people who arrive by boat, once they request asylum, they have legal rights under the International Convention, and they lawfully can be here.
It's interesting that it's called detention. It sounds like they've done something wrong, doesn't it? It's not. We don't use the word holding or...
No, that's right. And in fact, it's interesting. I actually had a chance to go to UK a little while ago, and part of that was to do some research, and we went to Sweden and Canada at the same time, and we were looking at reception arrangements or care arrangements, if you like, for asylum seekers in other countries compared to Australia. And it was really interesting going to the UK because, of course, there's not a mandatory detention regime there, nor is there in Sweden or Canada, I should say. Mm. And in fact, a bit of a funny story, when we were doing our research, we were asking officials and NGOs in these countries why they provide housing and food and all of these things to asylum seekers when they arrive, unlike Australia, where we put them in detention. And I remember this one story with where I was sitting down with a UK border official, uh-huh. and I said to him, why does the UK provide housing to asylum seekers? And he looked at me like I was slightly mad and said, well, it's a human rights issue. Mm. And I said, yes, yes. And he said, and besides, we couldn't possibly afford to detain them all. Mm. And, of course, you know, they're the two issues that Australia's dealing with.
Yeah, different processes, different set of issues.
That's right.
Are we also taking any people from the refugee camps around the world?
Yes, Australia certainly does, and we're one of the top three resettlement countries in the world. Actually, it's a highly regarded program. Now, I'd have to say, whilst we're doing a fantastic job in resettling from camps around the world, part of the reason we can is because it's quite hard to get to Australia. Now, other countries, of course, have people flowing across their borders. At much greater numbers. And so Australia has always had a really good, well, for a long time, it's had a really good resettlement program. Of course, that's been challenged now as people, more and more people come by boat. But in actual fact, we can afford to do both. Our numbers are insignificant compared to others around the world. And in some ways, as someone else who shall remain nameless from another country said to me recently, I don't really understand what Australia's problem is. Why are you so worried about this small number of people? But of course, you know, it is a hot topic, and one of the difficult things I think for Australia is that we have not domestically legislated standards of care for asylum seekers. So we kind of have this awful luxury in debating how we're going to treat them. But, you know, countries like the UK and many in Europe and Sweden and Canada have domestic legislation. It's not an argument about how they'll treat them. It's there in legislation.
Mm. Yeah, it's a human right.
I think we often don't put a face to these people, though. You know, we talk about them as refugees and they're in detention. And I think a lot of people don't actually get to know them, and I had an interesting experience. I was actually at a wedding, and we were standing in the circle to say goodbye to the bride and groom. The person next to me started talking about live exports.
Oh, yes.
You know, and we had this interesting conversation, and then I said, yeah, and this refugee situation with Malaysia, they just shut down. Like, it was, the cows were more important.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying we shouldn't do something about that, but what I'm saying is it seems like people don't want to talk about this.
Mm.
They don't want to put a human face to this. It's the people on these boats, and we don't want to know why they're coming or what, you know, or help them.
And I'm assuming as well that there's a difference between, you know, a lot of countries want and need skilled labour, and that's an immigration program, which I'm sure has some sort of integration program. But you know, when you're talking about refugees and asylum seekers, yes, some of them. I mean, I've got a couple of friends back home in London who, quite a few years ago now, but got out of the Eastern Bloc, as we used to call it. You know, what's now Eastern Europe, and you know, one of them's a dentist, and one of them's something else, a professional. But you know, they're kind of working in retail because they have to retrain, and it's so expensive. And so a lot of these people actually are professional people in their own country. They've had to flee for whatever reason, and their self-esteem and that must just be such a shock, but it's about survival, isn't it? But
well, that's right, and you both made really good points there, and the reality is that Australia and other countries in our region need both skilled and unskilled labour. You know, there are a range of jobs that we need to fill, and we should be looking to the advantages that people can offer in settling here. But Joya, I guess your point too is it is very difficult, I think, for people to get to know asylum seekers and refugees, and part of that's for a good reason. They've got, you know, they're going through a pretty hard time, and they've got their own privacy and confidentiality, and we don't tend to promote that too widely. Where it would put them at risk of trauma, if you like, or perhaps re-traumatisation of their story. But one of the interesting things is that, as I said, you know, 8,000 to 10,000 people are living in the community at the moment, and we don't seem to worry about that. You know, they just get on with it in the community. Mm. Sky hasn't fallen in. Mm. It's pretty normal. I think part of the challenge is that, you know, there's a real spotlight on the boat arrivals. There's a real political debate. There's challenges with both sides of government. But there's also a really great success story at the moment, and that's it's got a terrible name. It's called Community Detention. I think we need to rebadge that. But it's essentially about an announcement that Minister Bowen made last October, and that was to, in recognition that children and unaccompanied minors and families should not be in detention, and or certainly not for long periods of time. And so the community detention program's been sort of going full blast and since then. And the government is on track to get most or a majority of families and unaccompanied minors relocated into the community by the end of June. And that's fantastic. We have to acknowledge there are still thousands of adult men in detention who absolutely need our attention as well. They're the ones who are self-harming and in tragic circumstances killing themselves. And we need to turn our mind to that. But we've also got to celebrate the small things along the way.
Mm. Well, Kez, thank you so much for coming on Spirit Lounge and for sharing with us tonight.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Kez.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
I was trying to cross the street when I tripped and spilled my coffee on a man who yelled at me. Then he walked off in a hurry, now he's gonna be late for work. So we called his secretary, said to cancel his appointment with the guy in the lobby who's been waiting for a while. I'm talking.
And you're on Spirit Lounge with Joy the Priest and Bertie the Pom and Andrew the Poof. And that was a wonderful conversation with Kaz, wasn't it?
Fabulous. Fascinating insight into, refugees and asylum seekers.
And we've had a couple of SMSs about the subject. The first one is says that Robert Mann, noted left-wing academic, has stated that Howard's tougher stance on boat arrivals was better than the ALP's, which has cost lives. Well, that's a...
And that's from Robert. Thank you, Robert.
A point of view that, And from Andy, he says this refugee discussion brings to mind the song Imagine by John Lennon. So, Andy, we're going to play that for you a little later on.
Andy, you had the priest rushing to the CD library to find it. She's now the panting priest.
And she tore John Lennon out of the
poor John
the shelves. We're going to talk now about this Church of England in the UK have decided to allow celibate gay bishops. Quite amazing, isn't it? The Church of England is set to approve the appointment of openly gay bishops, providing that they are celibate.
I mean, what's the point?
This document, Choosing Bishops, the Equality Act 2010, gosh, it's not even 2011, summarises points which those involved in the nomination process need to keep in mind when considering candidates in order to avoid them breaking the law. So they're basically doing this so they can't break the law. And it reiterates that gay clergy can be made bishops as long as they are not sexually active, and get this bit, and never have been during their time in the priesthood.
Well, you know what? First of all, how can they prove that? And secondly, why should they have to prove that? It's pathetic.
Isn't it amazing?
It's the Church of England kind of stumbling about again, not knowing what they're doing.
But even if, okay, they aren't vetoed by this first process, that they're allowed through this first process and they do whatever test they do.
the mind boggles.
Yeah, to prove that they've never had sex during their priesthood. It can be all vetoed anyway. Just if it's likely to upset people or cause division and disunity, then they won't appoint them.
I don't quite see the point of this at all, I have to be honest. There's somebody knocking around the Church of England with nothing else to do.
Well, yeah, I think they're just trying to abide by some legislation. And it's the Equality Act, and this has been going through the Victorian Parliament, isn't it? And they're trying to get this through. And remember that one of them went to sleep and didn't go to the vote or something, and so they actually didn't get it through. I mean, it's not really funny, but that was funny. Who said there was no God? But they're saying that, that the churches are exempt from the equals rights.
But again, what we've got is we've got one rule for the rest of the world and a different rule or exceptions for the church.
Yeah.
Which, you know, hello. Like, try and integrate yourself with the rest of the world, the rest of civilization, you know, instead of this kind of... they can cocoon themselves, don't they, as being a higher being with their own rules and their own laws and their own exemptions and exceptions, and they try to rewrite law, and it's... I don't know, for me it just doesn't connect, this religion and law. Who are they trying to appease here?
Well, the law... Basically,
their law.
They like to no. I think they're obviously law. in the UK. There's some equality act that they have to abide by, but the Equality Act also allows them to place exemptions.
But there are so many buts that actually it's complete. The whole thing's futile.
Though interestingly enough, the thing that I read, or the thing that I get out of this little article, is that they're not actually saying that you can't be gay and be active within the church leadership
as a priest.
What they're saying,
not sexually active.
Well, what they're saying is you have a right to own your sexuality, but you're not. It's the actions of acting out your sexuality, be it with your partner, that's what they're discriminating against.
You have to be a non-practicing homosexual.
You have to repress something that's within yourself to become part of that leadership structure, and that really that kind of grinds my gears.
Well, it's not healthy, is it?
No.
I mean, it's been proved in the Catholic Church it's not healthy to make people do this. I mean, we're trying to get the message across that it's okay to be spiritual regardless of your sexuality and how you express that sexuality. And here's this church telling their priests that if they want to become a bishop, they have to suppress their sexuality.
It's wrong.
Very, very wrong.
Yeah, oh, here we go again. Well done, Church of England.
Yeah, and on that note, let's go to a brighter note, and we're going to play Imagine by John Lennon, and this is for you, Andy. On Spirit Lounge with the priest, the pomp and the poof. And congratulations to Anne of Glen Iris, who has won the tickets to Manacle.
Yay! Well done, Anne from Glen Iris. That's two tickets for the play, so I hope you really enjoy it.
I'm sure she will.
Yeah, and every row is front row, hey?
No, there's three rows. But if you want to get the back row, you've got to get in first. Spirit Spa, it is time, Bertie.
Oh, if I stay alive long enough. Now, we're going to talk about sugar this week.
Sugar? What kind of sugar?
Sugar, sweet. All kinds of sugar. Now, did you know that sugar is one of three kinds of carbohydrates?
I did.
So the starch, and there's fibre, and the sugar. And the body breaks down all forms of carbohydrates into glucose for its primary source of fuel, which gives the body energy. So sugar's good. But the sugar is either natural or it's processed and added. So guess which is the good guy and guess which is the bad guy.
I can't.
Andrew, don't look so confused.
I'm just thinking about that soft drink I had earlier tonight.
Well, I have got something to tell you about soft drinks just in a minute.
Uh-oh.
So, of course, natural sugar is the good guy, and the processed and added sugar, basically the white table sugar, is really bad for you. And the body cannot tell the difference between natural or processed sugars because they're identical chemically. So, you know, you can eat good sugar and bad sugar, but your body doesn't. It just processes it all the same because it can't tell the difference. I mean, our bodies are quite sophisticated, but they're not that good. And natural sugars have no nutritional value. They do contain vitamins and minerals, processed sugar provide many calories, totally unnecessary in our diets. Our bodies can easily survive on foods that contain natural sugar alone. We do not need processed sugars. So when your body has more sugar than it needs, it begins to convert the sugar into body fat and it stores it. And so if you don't do any exercise and you keep on eating lots of sugar, guess what happens?
You put on weight.
That's what happens to most of us. And the problem lies not in eating foods that are naturally sweetened, but the volume of processed foods that we consume. Because the more sugar we eat, the more the body craves it. Because human beings are born craving sugar. I mean, that's the one thing we're born craving. Now, Andrew, soft drinks man, listen to this fact, okay?
No, don't tell me. Did
you know that soft drinks, right, one can of Coke or Pepsi, so this is full fat Coke or Pepsi, has 40 grams of sugar in it. That is the equivalent of approximately, because there are conflicting reports.
Don't tell me.
Guess how many teaspoons of sugar per can?
Five?
Between no. seven and ten.
What?
Are you really? Kidding?
Between seven no. and ten. Yep. One can of Coke. No. One can of Coke has between 7 and 10 teaspoons of sugar in it.
But
it is so bad for you.
But it's so delicious.
It's so bad for you. I only drink Coke when I've got a hangover.
Oh, that's the only time I ever drink it either.
Now, talking of wine, my favourite subject. Now, the amount of sugar in alcoholic drinks, of course, varies. And a glass of red wine has about 1.5 grams of sugar. A glass of red wine, my favourite, has about 1 gram of sugar.
So 1.5 grams, how many teaspoons?
Don't know. I didn't do that conversion. Oh.
But that's like a tiny amount compared to
compared to a drink. Lots of red wine, but no.
Yes, you should drink red wine rather than
not
Coke.
Not Pepsi.
An interesting fact here: grapes grown in cooler, wetter regions, like Victoria, for example, have lower sugar, and grapes grown in drier climates, maybe like Western Australia, places like that, have a much higher sugar content.
So we drink Victorian wine.
So we must drink Victorian wine. Yes, the cooler climate wines. But of course, the best wine comes from those areas where the grapes have high sugar concentrations. So that's very annoying. So when you're drinking very expensive, very good wine, it's also got high sugar content. Can't win, can we? We cannot win.
I just go back to my zero.
So I've looked at a few sugars just to help us decide, kind of let's identify where the good sugars are, because that's all we need, and where the bad sugars are that we shouldn't be eating anymore.
So the ones in chocolate, good sugars.
Well, yeah, but the high cocoa, like if it's got over 70% cocoa, then it's okay. Remember we did chocolate the other week?
Yes.
You know, what did we say? Up to four slabs a day of really high quality.
Slabs.
No,
slabs.
Squares.
Slabs.
Squares.
Like I'm going to have a slab of dark chocolate.
Truckload. Squares. I meant squares. I got my squares and slabs confused. So glucose is the simplest form of sugar. Now, have you heard of the glycemic index?
I have.
GI.
Yes.
The glycemic index is what measures the speed that the glucose enters our bloodstream. So foods that are rated high on the GI, guess what? Lollies, sweet biscuits, cakes, muffins, white processed foods. So they give you that instant sugar high, but then you're hungry like an hour later. Yeah.
So all the fun foods.
All the fun foods, yeah. Mm. Whereas fructose, which is found in fruits, vegetables, fruits, beans, whole grains, even honey, they have a low glycemic rating. So they're absorbed much more slowly in the body, healthier, more natural sugar. So again, you know, it's simple. It's basic stuff, isn't it? You cut out all the crap. And even if you're eating healthily, your body's getting enough sugar.
But you say glucose, it says here, that white processed foods, including bread...
Yeah, glucose is in
pasta and rice.
Glucose is in nearly everything.
Because they're not crap food, though.
It's better to eat brown rice rather than wholemeal rice, wholemeal pasta, brown bread, not white bread. I mean, you know, because they're less processed, they're more wholesome. Lactose and galactose. It sounds like something from Starship Enterprise. <doesn't> Primary sugars found in milk, because we often hear about people who are lactose intolerant, don't we?
Yes.
And I've never really quite understood what that means.
I've never heard of people that are galactose intolerant.
Did they have pointy ears? But it means that their intestine doesn't produce enough of the enzyme lactase to break down the lactose. So it is an intestinal kind of deficiency. And that's what happens to people when they're lactose intolerant. You get those tests, don't you? But luckily, I'm lactose tolerant, so I can drink lots of flat whites and cappuccinos. And sucrose is found in fruits and vegetables. It's also known as table sugar or white sugar. And it comes from sugar beets in the northern temperature, sugar cane in the tropical countries. But the health issues really are very simple. Excess sugar contributes to all the nasties: diabetes, heart disease, obesity, dental decay, cancer, hyperactive behaviour, arthritis. So think about how much sugar you're consuming, because it's not just about weight. It's actually about all those other hidden things that the sugar can contribute to. So there we are, good sugars versus bad sugars. Are we all depressed now?
We are.
I'm going to have a glass of red wine.
So I think we should have another track.
And let's
I
have
think
a song.
I think you should introduce it.
Oh, well, I don't know what
it's
we're playing.
It's your track.
I've just
it's my
share
track.
Into the CD player.
Well, you see, we've reprogrammed this program.
We always do. What are you
every,
talking about?
Every 10 minutes in an hour. This is one of my favourite all-time ladies, the Bionic Woman. She's been had that much surgery.
She doesn't eat sugar.
She doesn't eat sugar. The beautiful Cher. What about the moonlight?
We're on Spirit Lounge with Joy, Bertie and Andrew. And we've been talking about refugees tonight. Mm. And there's an amazing documentary that's going to screen for the next three nights, starting tomorrow night, mm-hmm. on SBS. And I just want to read about what it's about. It's called Go Back to Where You Came From. In one of the most ambitious documentary series ever made, Go Back to Where You Came From brings the hottest debate in Australia from the front page of the newspaper into living rooms around the country. Six Australians who agree to challenge their preconceived notions about refugees and asylum seekers go on a confronting 25-day journey, tracing in reverse the journeys that real refugees have taken to reach Australia.
Fascinating topic. Fascinating. And it's on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night.
So does that mean these people have, like, jumped on a boat in Darwin and are travelling back across the ocean?
Well, I watched a short on SBS. They had a clip from it. And yes, that's what it looks like.
They're retracing their steps.
Yeah.
And going, actually experiencing what they experience to the lengths they go to reach these shores.
Yes, and I think what happens is they go to different countries too.
Yeah,
because they go to Malaysia and then they go off to different countries.
And there'll be different reasons why people are leaving their homeland, won't there? As we were discussing earlier with Kaz.
Yeah. So it sounds absolutely amazing.
Yeah, good show.
Yeah. What's actually interesting about this show is that they say they've chosen people to go who want to challenge their preconceived notions. And so I think there's going to be a bit of growth for the characters, even though it's a documentary. I guess they're characters in the story. There's going to be a bit of growth there, and it'll be really kind of cool to witness that.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what preconceived ideas, what the different preconceived ideas are that these 25 people have, because I'm assuming that some will.
There's only six.
Oh, sorry.
Six. Not 25 days.
Oh, it's 25 days.
I was going to say. I was like, oh.
It's okay. Look, you know I'm blind and I can't read. What these six? I mean, I'm assuming the six people all have very different. Perhaps have very different views or preconceived ideas about refugees. I would imagine some, you know, are more understanding than others.
Yeah, I think it'd be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, but talking to Kaz earlier, we were discussing this while Cher was warbling away, and there's so much about refugees and asylum seekers that isn't covered by the front page media, isn't there, in terms of more come through by plane with a legal visa than come on boats.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the boats that get all the headlines.
Yeah, yeah, because you know, they're washed up on the, they're rescued, or, you know, they're the ones that don't have the papers. And why should it be a detention centre? You know, why shouldn't it be called a holding centre? Because actually they've done nothing wrong but tried to survive.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it's good debate and good discussion. Well, our time's nearly up, guys.
But we're going to be back next week.
We are. And we hopefully have got Katriana with us, who is the singing bowl healer woman. Watch this space.
Sounds quite interesting. Is she going to bring the singing bowl?
Well,
or does she sing to the? No, I'm not even going to go there.
We'll have to wait until next week to find out, I think.
Thanks to all who sent in SMSs, and we will be back next week. It is goodbye from the priest, the pom, and the poof.
Bye.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.